This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Pete Carroll in an hour and a half, 9:30 this morning. Our regular old Monday morning chat with the head coach, Brock. Be curious where he's at and how he's feeling. I think it's a pretty good win yesterday overall. It's one they had to have. And we can keep talking about some of the oddities of it. Did they play well? Did they not? And 0 for 10 on third downs and some problems with the defense and this and that. Coaching. I thought the coaching staff had a rough day. We'll talk more about that in a few. But they had to have the win, and they
yes.
did.
Yes.
You have to be 2-2, not 1-3 with St. Louis or L.A. coming to town. You just have to be.
And this isn't going to be pretty. All right, Gambo, when did we have Gambo on? Last Thursday or something? He's like, well, you know, it's these teams aren't what they used to be, and Seattle used to be this intimidating and tough. Oh, it's actually Wolfley. He's like, I used to so appreciate what they were. Well, they're getting back to that. You know, they're going to force this run, except for a third and one. They're going to force that issue and get back to doing some of that, and it's not going to maybe look like the rest of this league. You know what? And their goal is going to be to run it 30-plus times a game. And I don't really care that Mitch Trubisky throws 6 touchdowns, and everybody else can throw it through the air. And you know what? Matt Ryan can have a QB rating above 133, Salk, throw 7 touchdowns and no picks the last 2 weeks, and Atlanta lose both games. Good for you. Go have all your stats. Go have all your pretty passing numbers. Go do it like everybody else. This team is not going to. They're going to run the ball. They're going to try to get to their 50-plus in their run and completions. They're not going to turn it over, and they're going to find ways to win, which they did yesterday.
And we're going to find some takeaways.
Got like a deep touchdown, Seahawks!
It's Brock and Salk's takeaways.
Got a man out there. It is intercepted. Shaq Griffin picks it off.
And it starts now.
I'm going to start with the over. Because it's happened only 5 times, I guess, in the Seahawks franchise history. And this is the first time they've gone 0-for on third down and 1. It's also the first time they went 0-for and had like 350 yards of offense and 170 rushing yards. And that's probably why they got it done. And I saw just a scathing piece from field goals, just taking apart Schottenheimer. Wrong hire, can't do it, can't win with them. Pete's got to take the play calling duties. Like, something drastic's got to happen because, I mean, 0-for-9, 0-for-10 on third down. Well, what if I were to tell you that Doug ran 2 third downs a yard short? What if I were to tell you that his first little option route set up for him to win and he runs it at 4 yards instead of 5 on their opening drive? Like, that happened. Is that his fault? Is that Russell's fault? Is that no? It's just Doug hasn't played in a while, and you know maybe misjudged where it was, and he had another like 3rd and 9. And he just came up a yard short instead of pushing it a yard deeper. He probably wanted to rush it and thinking you know there's going to be pressure and that sense of urgency, and so he runs 2 short. Russell scrambles on 1 and airmails Lockett. That's a throw that he makes 9 out of 10 times. He's got to make. You spike the ball. You know there's 4 right there. And by the way, Brandon Marshall had the most critical drop of the entire game on first down that gets you inside the red zone. Instead, then it's a run, it's 3rd and extra long. Now, unfortunately, you're going to look at the 3rd and 1 and the 3rd and 2 and some of those missed calls. But there's half of your 3rd down conversions that are not on your OC, that are on your quarterback and your wide receiver and on that execution to go out and get it done. I think those are easily fixable. I did not feel like this was one of those 3rd down situations where you had no shot. Oh, my gosh. They got no chance. No, this felt a whole lot more like the player execution in those moments than it did necessarily me putting all the burden and all the weight right on the shoulders
of Schottenheimer. Dwayne Brown was asked about those 3rd down issues after the game.
Just a lack of communication. You know, trying to get on the same page. It was nothing we hadn't seen all week. You know, different looks that they brought. So we just got to continue to communicate and get on the same page. Other than that, just pitching and catching, and making plays, you know. So we'll get it corrected, you know. Definitely something we gotta look into this week.
You blame Doug for those 2 plays. Any chance Doug doesn't blame Doug?
No, it's not on Doug. Absolutely not.
Russell didn't make a good throw.
Exactly.
If he had hit him higher or whatever, it would have been fine.
Oh, and by the way, the last one, Nick Vinette, doesn't understand the concept. They run a little rub route, you know, with the flat, and he's got to just whip his head around and show Russell his numbers, and he's like, and just doesn't turn around. Like, what, Nick? What are you doing right now?
You love Nick Vinette, don't
no,
you?
No, there's times I do love
no,
him.
You don't.
Actually, he blocked pretty decently yesterday. He had one of his better blocking days. But bro, this is a 3rd down. Here's the concept. You ready? You're gonna run a little rub route, and Mike Davis is gonna come out, and both guys are gonna go with the flat route. And if you turn your head around and show Russell your numbers, he's gonna going to throw it to you. But if you don't, the ball's going to whiz right by your ear for the ninth missed third down opportunity. But somehow, that's on Schottenheimer.
I don't think I've heard you criticize a player more than Nick Vinette.
That's not true.
What player have you criticized more?
I'll think about it.
There's no chance there's one.
Get your head around, dude.
Well, kid from Kent, Curtis Rogers may not know who he is, but Pete Carroll was awfully happy with the game that Mike Davis had yesterday. Why wouldn't he? 102 yards, and Pete Carroll loved it. Cut 10.
He played a great football game. I mean, he played a great football game. He was so competitive and so elusive and so tough. He played a great football game, you know, and he found out when we were here at the stadium that he would get a chance to start, and really wanted to, we talked about it, we wanted him to start, you know, because he had more background and experience in putting Rashad out there right up, you know, without any warning and all that, knowing that Rashad would play. Mike just came through beautifully. Our guys really believe in this guy. It's because of all of the work he's done since he's been here. He's been so tough and so aggressive and so competitive. He's just right at the heart of, you know, the kind of guy that we like having on our club. So for him to come through in a big way, it was great.
Did you like the sleeping celebration?
I was trying to figure that one out.
You're sleeping on me.
I guess
they're
so.
They're all sleeping on me. Basically, it's taking the old Kevin Jones pointing at the watch, it's about time, and updating it and making it much bigger to you're sleeping on me. I'm just going to lay down and take a nap in the end zone. Obviously, I approved of the napping, yes, as I'm sure you could guess. Yep. He was good, though. He ran hard. He showed great vision in the game. By the way, Penny was really good. 9 carries, 49 yards. That's a pretty good day at the office for Rashad Penny in his fourth game. Chris Carson's obviously been good when he's played this year. I think Penny's going to be good. And I recognize the challenges, however, with picking a running back in the first round.
Yep.
He might be very good, but he needs to be great to make that worth it. With all the other holes and things that you need to fill in this team, and I understand the need for a running back stable, you can find running backs, man. You really can. And right now, it looks like you've got three or four of them on this team that can all do the job. Unfortunately, you know, that's a... And I like the pick, and I like Penny. But he's got to be great to make it worth it.
Yeah. And I liked a lot of the run game. How about rushing in from the, twice? The first one got called back, and Pete was furious about it. I guess they didn't see little Joey Hunt say, hey, I'm giving you my numbers here. And they just thought little Joey Hunt was a little fullback or something. So they screwed that thing up. But they ran that in. Didn't matter. They came back, and they ran in a second time. And, you know, the one that Russell Lee blocked, that's two, like, red zone rushing touchdowns. They didn't have zero. They had zero all of last season. Yeah. That's an improvement.
Takeaways.
I'll tell you what else is an improvement, stopping the run. And aside from Shaq Griffin, he just lost containment one time and allowed the running back to get outside. Aside from that, how about this? They contained, the Hawks did, Arizona's run game so thoroughly, it so frustrated and humiliated David Johnson. He was irate. I was surprised he didn't give the sidelines the middle finger of Mike McCoy over there. But Johnson had one run for 21 yards. He and Edmonds combined their other 51 yards on 24 carries. So outside of that one run that got outside and bounced out of containment of Shaq, 24 other carries for 51 yards. That's winning football.
Yeah.
That's winning football. You just did not. It was what they did to Adrian Peterson the year before with Cam and Earl and all of these, Michael Bennett and all of them. Well, guess what this crew just did? Well, guess what they just put together?
And guess why? This will be one of my takeaways, and that's that Jaron Reed continues to play his best football. The best football we've seen from him as a Seahawk. He was disruptive. He got upfield. He had a sack. He was in the backfield. All the things that sort of waiting for from Jaron Reed, I think we've seen here over the last couple of weeks, and they got a little bit from everybody. Jacob Martin had a nice play in the backfield. Frank Clark had a nice play or two. Brandon Jackson had a big play late. Quentin Jefferson had a couple of big plays.
Tackles for losses.
But where's the pass rush? Where's the rush on Rosen? He had all day late in that game behind a joke of an offensive line. They've got to find a way to pressure the quarterback. And I know Deion Jordan would make a difference in that, but you just can't count on him. So where is that pass rush going to come from, Brock?
Good question. Good question. It's a little bit of a line they walk. It's one of my takeaways. We talk about getting back to the essence and the roots of who this club was. They ran the ball. They stopped the run. And you remember when they had the big walrus in the middle? And then they put Brett Bryan in like that Frogger stance. Like you couldn't run on him. But then ultimately when teams threw against that group, they couldn't get to the quarterback either. So it's almost a split. When Puna's in there and Brandon Jackson's in there and Jefferson's in there, guess what those guys are doing? They're stopping the run. You're not going to run. Yeah, but you're going to have a really hard time getting to the quarterback.
How was Puna?
Puna was good, man.
Puna's good.
Puna's good. I like Puna Ford. He played really well. He had tackle for loss and contributed with a bunch of penetration as well. It's pretty cool.
takeaways.
All right, I have sort of an obnoxious one, but I'm going to give it to you anyway.
All right.
The Seahawks have played four games, quarter of their season. How many late hit on the quarterbacks do they have?
One.
Quentin. For Quentin Jefferson, who pushed the guy like 5 seconds after the whistle and absolutely...
I was shocked yesterday. When Bobby hit Rosen early in the game, I was patently shocked.
That one probably could have been called.
Oh, had it been a sack, it would have been called. I was shocked that that was not thrown.
That the Seahawks are taught how to play this game correctly, and because of it, they don't get this call. Like, I know that everybody's...
Or they don't get to the quarterback.
Well, one or the other. But they hit the quarterback a whole bunch of times in the game. Yeah. I mean, there were still four or five times they hit the quarterback. And it's not like all year they don't have any sacks. They do.
But the problem, Mike, they have zero.
Brock, the only one was for Quentin Jefferson shoving a guy after the whistle.
But part of the problem is that Bobby hit. You're sitting there looking at it. Is that a penalty? It should have been a penalty.
When you think that on every single pass interference or throw to the outside. On every single pass that is broken up, you go, I wonder if that's going to be pass interference. Like, it's just not that different. I'm sorry. And quite frankly, the pass interference is worse. The call they made in that game, was it on Trey Flowers or Shaquille Griffin? I forget who. For sticking his arms out at the very... Oh, it was on Justin Coleman. At the very end. Like, to me, that's not pass interference. He is going for the ball 100%. He lunged for the ball and didn't get there. But instead, it's a spot foul, and the guy gets the ball in at the 1 yard. It's absurd. Mm. That's a 30-something yard penalty. That is a joke. And significantly worse. Significantly affects the game more than the late hit and the quarterback stuff, which I think is avoidable.
Okay, you done?
Yeah.
Because we got to get your timeouts here eventually.
No, I'm done with that. Go to the next one. Let's go.
Takeaways.
Where was a deep shot? They did not throw a ball down the... One of Russell's greatest strengths. And you've seen it in other games, right? You've seen the Lockett touchdowns. You know, big play touchdown every game except for yesterday. Where was a shot down the field?
Is it against that? Do they not want to do him against that team? Patrick Peterson and
maybe
Antoine Bethea.
Maybe. I mean, maybe Peterson played a role in that. And I'm certain that the pass rush, that you don't want Chandler Jones and Golden, like, don't play to their strengths. Run at them. And you ran at them a bunch. So this is just like, what do you want? You can't do necessarily everything all the time, but you should at least be able to take a shot or two. There should have been at some point some play action off of all of that run action, be it the zone read or something, that dials up a vertical down the field. I think the one to Doug, the vertical up the middle, was about it. I think that may have been as far as air. You know, they measured the ball in the air. I think that was the longest throw. I mean, that was surprising. Mm. Usually when you run it for 170 in this league, you're going to couple it with some really good play action and some shots and some dynamic plays down the field. And that was kind of completing the circle. That was the one element they were missing. Maybe they could convert a third down, that those were going to be called. Maybe if they could have stayed on the field even longer, that opportunity would have played itself out, but certainly didn't yesterday.
Takeaways.
Brock.
Mike.
What is the deal with the wasted timeouts? At least the first one came in the red zone, but on the second one, they got to the line of scrimmage, and this is not an exaggeration, with 4 seconds left on the play clock. Mm-hmm. What is the deal with that? These are actually two they probably needed to take. Sometimes they take ones where they don't even need to. They'd be better off taking the penalty. These were their fault for not being lined up on time. In one of them, with 10 seconds left, Russell was trying to entirely switch the entire formation from left to right. Like, no, the guys on the left go to the right and vice versa. Like, dude, you don't have time for that.
Okay, do you want some data before? Let me stop you just real quickly. Mike Sando got back to me. Of course, Mike Sando, amazing databases. He said, I do track some of that stuff. There have been three times this season that they've entered the final 5 minutes of regulation. So the final 5 minutes of regulation, there have been three times that they've already entered it with less than two timeouts.
But they've only had four games. That's 75% of
no other team has done that more than once this year.
This has to stop.
Why?
This obsession.
It's insane.
Because it's impacting all of us. In fact, we wrote you some letters to tell you about how your obsession has impacted us. Hmm. Dear Mike, you are a great friend, and I'm so thankful for you. I wanted to share how your obsession has impacted me. When you rail against the Seahawks for taking timeouts at the wrong time, I feel a frustration unlike anything I've ever experienced. I remember a time when we were younger, and you used to watch games and cheer at all the exciting plays. But since your addiction, you've changed. I can't watch games with you anymore. You don't enjoy the games the way you used to, and it makes me sad. I'm begging you, Mike, please stop feeding your addiction. I believe in you.
I'm not sure what to do with that. Should I stop watching the games or, like...
Mike, every Sunday night my blood pressure rises as anxiety kicks in. I know what's about to happen, and I'm helpless to stop it. Helpless to stop you. Helpless to save you. I know an email is coming from you, and I know what it's going to say. Your obsession, your fascination, your addiction to the Seahawks timeout use has become a problem. It's impacted your life and your relationships, and I'm here today to ask you to please seek help, to change your life, and to find a brighter future. We support you, Mike. Please recognize the need for a change.
Okay. Well, I think I'm starting to hear this. I assume that's it. That's all we got.
Dear Saul.
Oh, no.
We're gathered here today because we'd love and support you. Your otherworldly dependence and fixation on the proper usage of NFL timeouts has reached an unhealthy level of addiction. One that has bled into every facet of your waking life, thus negatively affecting your emotional and physical well-being, as well as the mental health of those closest to you. Your addiction has affected me in the following ways.
Oh, no.
Stress. I have more of it. I'm already at about a 9 most days, but your timeout rants take it to about 11. I also have to readjust your levels when you go on tangential timeout rants, and that's sort of a minor inconvenience for me, but still an inconvenience. Finally, did I mention that I stress out a lot? Okay, good. In conclusion, my friend, please, from all those that love you, it's time to get help for your fixation. Because in the words of Pete Carroll, we love football, and football's fun. Don't be so serious that we can't have no fun. Love your friends.
Not sure what to make of all this,
please,
but I'm just going to read this text. It says, Salk, I will die on this hill with you. If you want to march on Renton, I will be there for you. Well, thank you. All right, what else we got?
Hold on, I got some numbers for you.
Oh, well, okay.
Sando.
Feeding my addiction.
Oh, okay, maybe I won't.
Takeaways.
It happened 0 times last year. Do you realize that? They'd fixed it last year. It happens, yes, it did. It happens right now. It happened 5 times in 2016, and it's already happened 3 out of 4 this year. Oh, crazy. By the way, okay, sorry. Yeah, I got that. I got one. Earl had a tough game yesterday.
I mean, yeah, he broke his leg and ended his season.
Yes, he did.
Thanks for playing, buddy.
He had a tough game yesterday.
You mean even before that?
Oh, yeah, even before that. And I'm not positive on the first red zone play where Rosen missed a gimme touchdown. You talk about a gimme? That was a gimme. Right? They had the 2 in cuts from the outside, a corner out by number 3, the most inside receiver. And Earl was in some kind of robber. He was going to jump one of those. Somebody had responsibility. And at a very minimum, there had to be some level of communication between corner and safety as to who was going to take that whole area that was totally voided. The second one was a deep post over his head. I mean, you have not seen him give up a deep post. That was like, who was the safety that you were really hard on?
I was hard on?
Yeah.
No, Pete was hard on.
Yes. What was his name?
Terrell.
Steven Terrell.
There you go. That was like that. That was.
He got through it.
Oh, my goodness. That thing was, that post was 5 yards. Yeah. I mean, Earl was 5 to 10 yards behind the ball. He is fast, but your job is what? Stay on top.
Deeper than deepest.
Deeper than deepest. And that thing was right over his head and should have been a touchdown. And then ultimately on the play that he breaks his leg on, you know, he's just kind of caught staring in the backfield trying to jump something once again and then can't make up. And when he does, he breaks his leg. So it was going to be a little rougher game for him. This wasn't a,
the best safety thing. Probably because he practiced too much.
Maybe.
Shouldn't have been practicing so much.
Takeaways.
That was a really strange game for Russell Wilson. He extended plays, but never really turned them into big gains. He didn't take a bunch of sacks, and his, like, running around thing was pretty effective, but then there were no plays to be made even after he ran around. He completed a ton of passes, but way too many third down completions were short of the sticks. He ran a few times, Brock. Finally, he kept it once or twice on the zone read, which you've been waiting for, but he was more effective as a blocker than he was as a runner, which is bizarre. Cut one. How about Russell's blocking on the first touchdown of the game?
On 2nd down and 5, takes the snap, hands it to Davis, finds some running room, bounces it outside right, down to the 10, down to the 5, dives in, touchdown, Seahawks! Mike Davis, where have you been, my friend? A 20-yard touchdown run around the Seahawks' right side, and he had everybody, including his quarterback, leading the way on blocks.
Russell tossed Bethea.
Yeah, he did.
Tossed that dude.
As Schlereth said, Bethea is going to be living and wearing
dude,
that.
He got buried by a quarterback.
Yes.
Good
Davis
luck to you.
Loving it.
Of course, man. He's our quarterback. So think about that. A lot of quarterbacks don't get out on the edge and block. So that's something I look forward to, and I know that it's coming.
I'll look forward to the SI article where they have anonymous sources from around the Seahawks, past and present, talking about how Russell risks his body to block for them. But whatever. I guess I won't hold my breath on that one. He led a final drive for the win, but on it, he only threw it twice for 15 yards.
Yep.
They ran for the rest of them.
Yep.
What an incredibly bizarre game, but I'll tell you what, I'll take it. Mistake-free, turnover-free for a second straight week. Not a coincidence they win both of those games, and just the lead blocking was awesome, man. I don't know how any teammate doesn't love having Russell Wilson as their quarterback.
You know what's interesting? If that was a playoff game, how many times does he pull that zone read? Because I was waiting for it. There were three or four times that it sure felt like, man, if this was 2012 or if this were a playoff game and he wanted to put himself in a little bit of harm's way, like there were multiple times where it just felt like it. You know, you're reading a couple things on that after he hit. Now, sometimes, okay, don't jump to the conclusion that every time it's a read. Sometimes in that action, while it looks like his own read, it is called give. Like, we just want to give it. You're not reading anything here. But there are a number of other times I'm looking at it either the edge defender or who he's reading, and
yeah, there's definitely some
there
more,
were some
more yards to be gained
yep.
there. Whole bunch of your text messages. Salk, maybe you need a timeout. Salk, keep up the timeout fixation. It needs to be cleaned out. I support you, Salk. Timeouts! Oh, my gosh, I love you guys.
It's amazing for how much he values
Hello.
The head coach the ball in possession.
I
they
might.
Just give one away.
And I'm a timeout managementaholic. Really. When Lydia is killing you, Salk, you know you've crossed the line. If Salk is on the dying on the timeout hill, then Brock's dying on the Earl is overrated hill.
Mm.
A lot of people saying they want to die on the hill with me. That's fine. We'll all be there together.
Takeaway.
So Sunday against the Rams, where you were the biggest underdog since the playoff game, since Beastquake way back in 2010, Pete's first year. Opened up a 7.5-point underdog. You were a 10-point underdog against Drew Brees and what, those 13-3 or 12-4 Saints way back when. You're going to be a heavy, heavy underdog. And against this Rams defense, you're going to have to screen and play pass. Much more than you did on Sunday.
They ran a successful screen.
And it was awesome.
They ran a successful screen.
And actually, you saw Justin Britton, those guys get up like, dang, that could have been a house call. Like, there was two blockers on one guy.
Poor Fluker is just lumbering down there. Like, I felt so bad for him. Don't let that guy go 15 yards down the field.
Did I rewind the touchdown run right behind his big butt? I sure did.
Yeah, you did.
Did he get up and play the sleeping game like all the other linemen? No, he did not.
He might not.
Why? Because he pile-drived his guy into the ground. Go watch this. He laid there on the ground, like hands up, like the rest of the guys all celebrating. He's like, I just did some work right there, and I'm going to go to sleep myself here for a second. I'm not about to get up and go over there and join somebody else's sleeping party. Oh, is he fun.
Those calves. Those
Stewart Body Show.
No, he is one
I
fun guy.
I rewound that touchdown to watch behind his big butt.
Yes, I did. I did.
Great statement.
And Schlereth was right. And Dick Stockton, you know, you're right. Where's this ball going? How many times have you said to me, Salk, where are you going to run in third and one?
Right behind him.
Yeah, why don't you run a little bit more on third and one?
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, Fetty coming off the ball, him coming off the ball, and Britt coming off the ball. That's a half a ton plus coming off the ball together. And when they do it in unison, there is an awful lot of force behind them. Arizona's front felt it. I guarantee you Golden and Chandler and those guys are like, dang, man, that's not that group that we just had toyed with the last couple of years. That's just not. I'm sore today. That was no fun stopping that run. And guess what? Mr. Brockers and Mr. Donald and crew this weekend, it's got to be the same thing. But there has to be a little more play pass and screen off.
All right, there you go. Those are our takeaways from a busy Seahawks game yesterday. Yeah, dude, Fluker's awesome, huh?
Oh.
He is just a mammoth human being, and it's fun watching him move people.
He just moves people. He does.
So and you would hope in run block. I mean, they've got to run the ball a ton next week against the Rams, right? You've got to let Britt and Fluker and whoever it is, whether it's Sweezy or Posick or whomever, plus a you've got to let them move forward, right?
Yes.
And just get after those guys and not be on their heels and let Aaron Donald just
Correct.
Wreck your life?
Correct. And that's where you would love, you know, a Disley comes in, and he just completed that puzzle with those guys even that much more, because now you're adding 270-plus is just a hammer there. And eventually, hopefully at some point, a fullback can come in the fold, too, to add even more dimension to that run game. But as it is, a huge, huge marked improvement over a season ago.
All right, so what kind of a game was this for the Seahawks? Big, small, happy, unhappy, a lot of different emotions coming out of this. We'll deal with them, sort them out together next here on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Is that a good win for the Seahawks yesterday? Might not have felt that way at the time, that's for sure. Brock and Salk here at 710 ESPN Seattle. And this hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Pete Carroll, an hour from right now. Always an important conversation to listen to the day following each game. Lydia, when we jumped on with you this morning, first thing you said was, not a great win. Kind of didn't feel great, right?
Nope, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Yep, don't do that.
All right, explain what you said.
Keep her name out your mouth.
There's mixed emotions about it. It's one of those that you don't feel great about because you lost two of your key pieces. And how can you ever feel great about that?
That you lose Disley and you lose Earl Thomas. And Coach Carroll talked about that post-game.
Sounds edited.
Said he
sounds like an edited version of what you said. I don't remember hearing mixed emotions.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't remember what happened yesterday.
That's also true. Right. That's also totally true.
Pete was conflicted. He said it on the field post-game. That kick goes in, and he said, if the cameras were on me, you would have seen just... Yeah, a lot of conflicted emotions. The players had conflicted emotions.
Sure.
You know, it's and you see that. It's hard to lose one player, let alone two. And at totally different ends of the spectrum. One that has been there and done it, seeking out a third contract, has banked, you know, generational money in this league and wants one more crack at it. And Will Disley is a fourth-round pick that's playing out of his mind. That's maybe the top rookie tight end in this league, making a huge impression to the point that players are all around him. So on two different occasions in that. Over the course of 60 minutes.
And when it comes to the injuries, I'm right there with you. When it comes to the way they played, I don't know whether I am. They didn't play great. That was not their best football
game.
Put
together a good and bad column. Are there more good or bad? I don't know. Have you ever done this in your life when you've had to make decisions?
Only once.
Only one time.
Yeah.
With me, I think. Didn't we do some of that? I think we did. We looked at the good and the bad, the pros and the cons,
right? The only
time
I've ever really done that is when I left Seattle for Boston. Yes. I screwed the whole thing up. So, hey, we all make mistakes.
We had lunch.
That might not be the best strategy for me.
At Azteca. Not even there anymore. They scraped that thing, and they put up an apartment.
All right, sometimes we all make mistakes. What are you going to do?
But if you put up a pros and cons list of this game, good and bad.
There was more positive than negative in the game. I really did. I thought, ultimately, there was more positive than negative, especially from the players. I thought the coaches had a rough game. Pete, Schottenheimer, maybe even Ken Norton, although I think it's a little harder to tell. I didn't think they coached a great game there yesterday. They wasted timeouts. I'm not going to get into a rant on it, but they did do it, not just in the second half, but what the heck was going on at the end of the first half, Brock? The entire system they went through at the end of the first half was a complete mess when they had an opportunity to score, and instead, like, they...
Well, they'd gotten to a fourth and one. I think this is how, and we can ask
Pete about it. They wasted a timeout. They lined up in shotgun on fourth and one, and then did the weirdest fake I've ever seen. Is running around in confusion going to convince the other team to jump off sides? Is that a thing? A defensive player gets down his three-point stance, and you bark out signals. Okay, maybe the signals are going to convince him to jump. But how is running around in mass confusion?
You never know.
Oh, my God, they're running around. Go after the quarterback. Like,
sometimes
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, the game.
And then they run a passing play and get sacked, take a penalty.
Yeah.
They're lucky to not give up a field goal only because the dude missed a chip shot.
Yep.
It was shameful. And really what it all came down to me throughout the game, their weird passes on third and one, their conservative runs on third and long inside field goal range.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, they couldn't decide whether or not to be aggressive or whether to be conservative.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think some of that's playing an 0-3 team. I think some of that's a rookie quarterback. You know, I jumped on the pregame show beforehand. I said, I think one of the guys is going to walk the most interesting line, difficult line today will be Ken Norton.
Mm.
Playing against Josh Rosen here, playing against a rookie. And how much do you want to heat him up and speed up his clock versus how much do you want to just play conservative and bank on him making a mistake? He's thrown a lot of interceptions. All right. He's an interception repeater. So how much of that and how do you kind of balance that?
Mm.
You know, and I thought he he had some challenge in that. All in all, you stopped the run. All in all, I guess that's the basic essence of it. You're right. On the periphery, you're totally right on some of these third and one calls. I think clock management, timeout usage, what you wanted to do at end of half. I think all of that is up for debate, and we can chat about it with Coach Carroll. And frankly, I bet he'll rather talk about that than the Earl Thomas middle finger. Yeah. I think he'll want to talk about that
stuff. Well, he doesn't know who Earl was.
Correct.
Off.
So all of that
stuff. It's a stuff, big stadium. Right?
A lot of people there.
All of that stuff is very real and I think very critical, and you're absolutely worthy of that. He would say to you, that's fine. Like the Saturn rings, that those are the rings around Saturn that are totally fair to criticize. As for Saturn itself, did we run the ball and stop the run and not turn it over?
They did.
Did we run the ball, stop the run, and not turn it over?
And win the turnover
battle.
Because
if we do those three things, my odds of winning here are like 85% to 90%.
And that's why ultimately.
Interesting job for us today to play like that on offense and not convert a third down the whole day. We ran the ball for over 170 yards, which is fantastic. Mike Davis ran like crazy. He gave us a great effort today when Chris couldn't go. And Rashad helped out as well. The kind of style we like, that's fine for us winning that way. I know everybody wants to have these big margins and all that stuff, but that's playing offense and defense and special teams all day long and giving yourself a chance to win on the last play of the game, and we did.
Yeah. And I think that's why I come away really happy with that game. I'm bummed out for Earl Thomas and what happened, although I think there may be a net positive there in terms of just wiping away that entire scenario. I'm extraordinarily bummed about the Will Dissly situation and that poor guy. He did just tweet a few minutes ago that, guess what, the sun came out today, just like it always does.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so good for Will.
Sun, the moon, and the truth. Mike Hopkins told us long ago.
He's got a long recovery ahead of him, and yeah. I wish that kid the best, and he's been awesome, and I hope he continues to be for the Seahawks. But overall, that's a net win for me, man. You go on the road and beat anybody, that's a win in the NFL. And now you come back at 2-2, and you had to have it. You had to win that game. You had to.
Yes.
And they did.
Yes. You can't be 1-3 with Arizona 1-3 in a game you felt like then you just didn't.
You lose that game, your season's probably over.
Yep.
Honestly, these last two games were must-win for the Seahawks. It was early in the year. It was too early to say that, but it's true. They had to beat Arizona,
Dallas.
And before that, they had to beat Dallas. They had to win those games.
Yep.
And now you put yourself back in a spot of 2-2, where we'll see. A wild card spot is very much within the realm.
And you know what else? I'll use your had to. You know what you had to do? You had to run the ball when it mattered. And you didn't on a 3rd-and-1 earlier in the game. And you didn't on a 4th-and-1 earlier in the game.
They did in 4th-and-1.
But you know what? But you know what? On 1st-and-10, with the game on the line and the game tied. On 1st-and-10, you got in shotgun, Mike, with the game on the line and in the most deciding moments, you got to go down with a game-winning drive. What, Russell's 19th or 20th in his career. And what did they do on 1st-and-10? They ran it for 13 yards. They ran it instead of throwing at that moment. Why are we throwing? Why are you doing? Nope, we run it for 13 yards. We'll cave down the left side yet again.
You know what I liked about all that? It wasn't just that they actually ran out the clock on them.
Yes.
I mean, how many times do you see a team get the ball with a minute 50, go down and score with a minute left, and then the other team's like, great, we still have a minute? Cool.
I thought they could have gained a couple more yards.
Nah, they didn't need to.
I don't know.
Said.
And I thought when that ball left Seabass's foot.
Pretty sure they didn't need any more than they got.
So you thought that was in the whole way.
Yeah.
Can I hear the game-winning field goal call?
Oh, he had a nice little draw. Lefty draw.
Let me hear it.
It's like Bubba Watson.
From 52, Michael Dixon puts it down. The kick has got legs. It is there. It is good. Sebastian Janikowski kicks it through. The Seahawks win on the last play of the game.
Hold on.
Whoa.
What's Dave doing in the background there? Does he have like one of those little flags? Yay.
No, that sounded like that sounded like a sea rat.
I don't know. I heard like when you said like.
From 52, Michael Dixon puts it down. The kick has got legs. It is there. It is good.
Great. I love that.
Yeah, you're right. I think the second time around.
He's got like one of the little mini flags that he's waving back and yes. forth in excitement.
Maybe that was the perfect kind of way to sum up a win or loss yesterday.
I didn't end up saying it, so shame on me. But I did have a feeling after Janikowski missed the first two that he'd hit a big one later.
Did you?
Just because that's the way this game was sort of destined to go. And what does he care? of anybody who's going to miss
maybe
two
his
field
job.
Dude,
you
on.
Miss that? You miss three field goals?
Guaranteed contract. He's played for 20 years. He's made a ton of money. He doesn't care. No one looks like they care less than Janikowski. He's hoping for that game can end so he can go back and rip
the ball. When they showed him there sitting between the coolers, what did they say? A lot of drinks around him. He was just chilling by himself. I'll tell you, his extra points before that, he drilled.
Yeah.
So that gave me a little confidence. There
he's
was
got
no.
Big leg.
He does. He does. He was super frustrated missing the others and
pretty good
delivered when it mattered.
52 out when they needed to. Good win overall for the Seahawks. We'll talk to Pete Carroll about it coming up here at 9:30. Before we do it, though, a little good news, bad news, no news. An all-time leader, a U.S. team that got embarrassed, and the end of a pathetic era. All next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, we're going to talk to Coach Carroll coming up in 45 minutes. Phone lines will be open really from 9 o'clock until then. Some thoughts on Earl Thomas and how this whole thing went down yesterday. Before we do it, though, what else is in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
Jake Browning became UW's all-time leading passer in the Huskies' 35-7 win over BYU.
Wow, I can feel the excitement, Kyle. Super cool, Kyle Brown. Good for you, Jake. Way to go, buddy. And way to go, Washington. Played their most complete game of the season. I thought this year they, too, would struggle to have stylistically just a imposing game and impose their will on somebody. And certainly a top 25 team, but they did that. Could have very easily been 38 or 41 to nothing in a shutout as BYU just did not threaten over the course of that game. And Jake Browning had a matchup that he just took apart. BYU is not a twitchy group. They're not a blitz group. They rush four big slugs, and they give you opportunities if you're accurate and you're on time. And he was both of those, 23 of 25.
Yeah,
what a night.
This is good news, and not just the all-time leading passer thing. I mean, that's nice. He's basically been there for such a long time and in the right type of an offense. This is about the fact that he's played really good football the last 2 weeks. After not playing well early in the season, and that's a great sign. Look, I don't dislike Jake Browning. I have my doubts about him, and I have, but I want to be proven wrong on that one. I want him to go out and lead this Husky team back to that Final Four and get them into this college football playoff. And if he keeps playing the way he did last night, that is absolutely a possibility for them. Kudos to Jake. Great news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Mariners ended their season by winning three in a row against the Rangers and finishing with 89 wins.
Yeah, Don Wakamatsu trying to help them out as the manager of the Rangers at the end. Wakamojo going the wrong way, I guess, in Texas. No news, unfortunately. This season has been over for 3 or 4 weeks, and what you do at the end of it, unfortunately, just doesn't tell me all that much. They've got a lot to figure out. They have a lot to decide, and I think I let you know exactly what I want them to do. I want them to tear this thing apart. I want them to tear it to shreds. I want to trade every good player on it for young talent, and then I want to get back to being great, not just mediocre, and I don't think they can do that unless they trade the assets that they have.
Yeah, ultimately, it's no news. It's really hard to imagine if we rewound the clock back to Peoria, Arizona in March, and you said to us, the Mariners will tie their attendance mark since, I think, 2008, the last 10 years. You're going to have like 2.3 million people in because they're going to win 89 games on the season. I think we'd have done backflips. Backflips down there in Peoria, Arizona. They're going to win 89 games. Are you kidding me? And they're going to have 26,000 on average in the place to watch it? Oh my gosh, sign me up for that. Well, you would have signed up for not even being relevant in September and being 10 games out of the playoff push.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Sebastian Janikowski missed two field goals before hitting the game winner versus the Cardinals. Four missed field goals in that game total.
Good news. Good news, I think.
I think it's some good news in there. Look, I understand.
He's missed four field goals, by the way.
He's missed three field goals.
He's missed four.
Well, he's only missed three.
Yeah, I understand.
He just missed one of them twice.
That's right. He got called back. So He only missed three.
Look, at the end of the day, I agree with Danny's theory on kickers. They are like spoiled milk for the most part. And it is hard seeing Jason Myers, who's been really good. He was the other guy in for competition.
Yep.
Perfect on field goals. He's missed one extra point so far this year. But I don't know that Janikowski's personality allows him to just spoil like that. I don't know that he cares enough to be like wrapped up in the mental side of winning and losing.
Now, he did say, I don't know if you read through his press conference yesterday. It was short and sweet. He did say it's all mental. Because he physically, he can make every one of those kicks all season long. So it's not a physical thing where he just can't do it anymore. So he did say it's all mental. And ultimately, I just had to remind myself, I've been there, I've done it, I'm going to go do it again. And he has. He's done more than anybody in the history of this league. More 50-plus yard field goals than anybody in the history in this league. And that's a tough place for some reason to kick, because it's been a graveyard for kickers. And, man, four missed kicks there yesterday from two of the most veteran, accurate guys in the league. Pretty remarkable.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Cougs beat Utah 28-24. They're now 4-1 on the year.
Did you, like, time these out so that you would have to do the Husky one and then the Cougs one?
No way.
And the environment was great, you said, over there, Kyle?
Yeah, great. Great crowd, packed house, homecoming weekend. Students turned out well. It was a good atmosphere and a beautiful day.
Were there a lot of people dressed up as Gardner Minshew?
There was Minshew. Yeah. There was headbands, fake mustaches, Uncle Rico's
aviators.
Left and right.
That's great news, man. They've created a sense of belief over there. They believe, right? It's not just been Luke Falk era. It wasn't just all about, hey, guess what? It's not just about you, individual player. You know, it's about a program and a culture that you've built. And Tracy Clays has come in. Oh, can't replace Alex Grinch. Well, actually, can't replace Luke Falk. Well, actually, he can. And when it's bigger than any one individual, you have a chance to sustain. And what a great start for Mike.
Agree with all that. It's great, man. They could very easily be 5-0. It's weird. You were saying earlier he's won by just forgetting about the run, and yet he's lost the one time he decided to oddly run it on 3rd and 6.
Well, that was Gardner. That was Gardner's call right there. He took a targeting shot to the chin.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The U.S. got destroyed in the Ryder Cup.
Dude.
They got destroyed. Dude. They got blowed out. It was awful. Bad news, horrible news, terrible news. Tiger was awful. Phil was worse.
Yep.
Patrick Reed was whiny. Spieth and Justin Thomas were good together, but then Jordan got beat yesterday in a singles match.
The only one that was good was Justin Thomas. Let's be clear.
He was good.
He had 4 points himself.
He was really, really,
really good. He did everything he could. Everybody
he and Jordan
else blew
were good together. But yeah. but other than that, I mean, just almost a waste. Dustin Johnson was bad. Brooks Koepka did almost nothing.
They just care more in Europe, huh?
I don't know whether it's about caring.
They care more about their team.
They do.
They care more about the team than the individual star. Huh, funny. That's been our theme for 2 hours today. That's what all of them have said for 25 years when you go over there and play, and why they've dominated this thing, because it's not just about an individual. That the, you know, four guys are going to be in a car, and it's going to be about their team, and they're all going to shoot commercials about their team. It's not going to be about this popularity contest, and
which
it's going to be Phil.
Because they're not even all from the same country.
Nope.
Good news, bad news, no news.
This I know, Salk, you'll find personally devastating. Mike Socia won't return as Angels
manager.
Well, bad news for the Mariners, yep. Because Mike Socia is a bad manager and has been one for a really long time. He's been coasting off a lucky World Series win in 2002 ever since, and he's not very good. Like he has more players that hate him than any manager I've ever heard of. He makes more bad decisions than any manager I could think of who's had his job forever.
Did he leave the Angels better than he found it? Because that's what's coming out of Southern California. One World Series, he built them into something they never were before, that he left them better than when he inherited it.
I think the fact that Artie Moreno came in with more money than God probably helped with that also. Yeah, I mean, I guess, but he's there for way too long, and I think they'll be better off without him. That is good news, Ben.
Oh, we got to get one more. Can you get the one more about Breanna Stewart?
Breanna Stewart won her 3rd MVP award of the year.
That's not bad. I don't think that's ever been done.
3?
The WNBA regular season, WNBA Finals MVP, and then the FIBA, you know, World Championships. She's MVP of all of them. I guess she's a very valuable basketball player. Kudos to you.
Maybe the most valuable player, as it were. All right, let's open this thing back up. 206-421-3776.
I just feel like people have been waiting.
3 takes on Earl Thomas. 2 that make sense, and 1 that most certainly does not. Plus your phone calls all next here on Brock and Salk.